there on your screen. And we'd love to agree or disagree in talking about this very important topic. Mike, welcome again.
Be back.
I think we can start with place is that there is a huge battle going on for the around the world.
Yes, there is. First of all, Islam is a huge religion. There are probably hundreds of millions. Hundreds of millions.
This is the Quality News Network. The president said today during a press conference, the interim progress report on the Iraq war is cause for optimism. The document shows Baghdad has met 8 out of 18 benchmarks, but has failed on another 8, with 2 goals having mixed results. President Bush said the U.S. mission can succeed in Iraq, adding troops will be withdrawn when conditions warrant it. The president also commented on the commutation of Lewis Scooter Libby's prison sentence, saying it was a, quote, fair and balanced decision. President Bush said today he is sending Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Defense Secretary Robert Gates to the Middle East next month. The two will attempt to strengthen international support for democracy in Iraq. A White House committee will pursue contempt charges against former White House counsel Harriet Myers after following the president's directive and not showing up for a hearing on the firings of federal prosecutors. The president invoked executive privilege, thus freeing Myers of any testimony. The latest intelligence report says Al-Qaeda has restored its operating capabilities to its strongest since 9/11. According to a U.S. counterterrorism analyst, the terrorist group has utilized its safe haven along the Afghan-Pakistan border and has repositioned itself to better attack the West. The International Atomic Energy Agency, the UN's nuclear watchdog group, has reached an agreement with Iran regarding how to proceed with negotiations over the state's nuclear activities. The agreement comes soon after Tehran's cooperation in scaling back its uranium enrichment program. That program, if not fully suspended, may lead to further UN sanctions. Former Mayor Sharp James was indicted on corruption charges today for allegations involving land sales and improper use of city-issued credit cards. The 71-year-old Newark mayor faces 33 counts of fraud for approving the sale of city-owned land to a female companion at below-market prices. The indictment also cites the use of city credit cards for funding vacations with 8 women in the U.S. and South America. It is reported that James has turned himself in to the FBI. South Dakota's first execution in 60 years was held last night. A 25-year-old Texas man was put to death by lethal injection for the torture and murder of a 19-year-old during a home robbery. Funeral services are pending for former First Lady Lady Bird Johnson following her death yesterday in Austin, Texas. She was 94. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business, next.
Looking to find the best in the USA? Come to Boulevards.com. We're the best address in city guides across the U.S. For the best information in travel, Boulevards.com gives you the most up-to-date choices for the best in dining, hotels, entertainment, adventure, and exciting tips to make your holiday the best it can be. Whether you're a local or just looking for great getaway tips, go to Boulevards.com and get the best. Be independent of search engines. Make your choices. We're Boulevards.com. Come visit us at SanFrancisco.com, SanJose.com, Carmel.com, WashingtonDC.com, PaloAlto.com, Seattle.com, Oakland.com, SanAntonio.com, Denver.com, and many more. We are Boulevards.com, the best in your visiting the USA. Come visit us at Boulevards.com.
12 scientists in a 41-foot raft made of reeds and wooden planks have set sail on a trip from New York to Spain. The journey, which is expected to take 2 weeks, is attempting to prove that Stone Age sailors could have made a similar voyage. Florida's governor is poised to sign an executive order requiring stricter greenhouse gas emissions from automobiles. His legislation would also raise energy standards on new construction and force utilities to generate 20% of their power from renewable resources. NOAA is poised to grant a 5-year extension to the Navy for its use of low-frequency sonar employed to detect submarines. Environmentalists oppose the move, saying the technology harms whales, dolphins, and other marine mammals. 92% of Americans favor labels on food, revealing the product's country of origin. That's according to a poll by Consumer Reports magazine. The publication says the majority of those surveyed approve stricter food labeling laws in general. Panamanian lawmakers have overwhelmingly approved a free trade agreement with the U.S. The treaty must now be ratified by the U.S. Congress. Motorola announced it expects to disappoint Wall Street by posting a quarterly shortfall in revenues. The company cites slower than expected sales in its cell phones in Europe and Asia. Light sweet crude is trading at $72.93 a barrel. Dow Jones is up 285. NASDAQ up 50. S&P 500 is up 29. This is the Quality News Network.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. A few weeks ago, I was at the Take Back America convention in Washington. I had a chance to interview all kinds of progressive activists. And I really enjoyed my conversation with the self-proclaimed Afro-netizen, Chris Rabb. He's one of the early African-American bloggers. He has coined the term Afro-netizen. And we talked about the issues that I think blacks and whites rarely discuss. I mean, really frank issues of affirmative action, an issue that, I think everyone should be concerned with. And then later on in the broadcast, we're going to, if we have time, if there's not too many people calling in, I'm going to play a interview with Donna and Larry Smith. They were featured in the movie Sicko. Now, at the time I did the interview, the movie hadn't come out yet, so I didn't really know their stories. Since then, I have seen Michael Moore's documentary. It's one of the best films I've seen, frankly, in some time, particularly on a public issue such as universal health care. So I think you'll enjoy both of these interviews. If you want to call in, this is a live show. The interviews are pre-recorded, but I'm happy to discuss any of the issues raised on either affirmative action or universal health care. Just give us a call. The toll-free number, my toll-free number works. It's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's start with my interview with Chris Rabb.
I'm here right now with Chris Rabb. He is a blogger and a self-proclaimed Afro-netizen, someone who has made his way by commenting on various issues that affect America, and particularly black America. He's a former staffer for Senator Carol Mosley Braun, and we were just talking here at Take Back America about affirmative action. And Chris, you were saying that you think liberals don't want to talk about affirmative action.
I do think that. I think most white people don't believe in affirmative action.
How do you define affirmative action?
I thought you were going to say, how do you define white people? Okay. How do you define
That's hard, too, but I think it's actually even harder to define affirmative action.
Well,
talking to the mic.
Okay. Well, affirmative action is not what, how we see it today. A lot of people think it's quotas, but affirmative action began, when was it? Was it
1960s?
Yeah, it was the late 1960s. It really got rolling in the early 70s when you had a critical mass of black folks who benefited from it. And basically it provided opportunities for people in employment, education, and business. But initially it was higher education. And it opened up doors for people of color and women who previously didn't have access to those institutions. They were all male, they were all white, et cetera. And so it allowed people who were already had a certain level of competency to take advantage of opportunities that they should have had previously, but because of bigotry, they didn't have. So,
but Chris, I think you'd find today 90% of Americans at least would say, maybe 70% would believe, all right, because we know that the racism still exists,
right.
but 90% of Americans would say that no one should be denied access to a job or an education or anything like that based on race. Now, I'll be the first to agree with you. There's all kinds of structural problems in the system that need to be overcome, but simply as you've defined it, that's not controversial.
Well, it's not controversial. It shouldn't be controversial because those are the facts around affirmative action. You have federally mandated affirmative action, and then you also have what's going on in corporations, where you're talking about folks who are trying to diversify the roles and in terms of hiring and promotion. That's different. But with regard to access to education, with regard to procurement opportunities for businesses, these doors were not open to us, and it had nothing to do with competency. So if you're saying, well, anyone who is able to do the job well should be able to do that, well, then that's non-controversial. That's kind of the point of affirmative action. But if you are someone who did not have the benefit of good formal education, you do not have the skill sets to compete, then you are not going to be a candidate for a lot of what affirmative action would provide you. So you can say, well, that's the problem of affirmative action, or you can say, well, that's the limitation of affirmative action, and there are other programs that need to be instituted to address the needs of the working poor, of working class folk,
Well, what is the difference, if any? Maybe you think there's no difference. What is the difference between equality under the law and affirmative action, or do you think there's no difference at all?
No, I mean, affirmative action is a very narrowly defined means of trying to level the playing field. It's just one of various programs. So you have, now if you want to talk about controversial, there are people who say, well, we need reparations in addition to affirmative action. And so that could be write me a big old fat check, or that could be provide federal programs that benefit African Americans specifically or directly.
I'm a supporter of that, by the way.
Reparations is a very socially acceptable thing in most parts of the world. I mean, it worked with Jews, with Japanese Americans, with a number of folks.
I have no problem with reparations, although I think it should go rather than to money, which I think is a limited resource.
Right.
I'd rather put into something like education and equal opportunity so that people have a chance to succeed and make it on their own rather than a check.
But see, the interesting thing is the most vocal and learned proponents of reparations never say, give me a check. None of them.
Right.
Zero.
No, I think you're right.
So the problem is when people hear something, when people talk, people choose to hear something that is not being said. And for those people who are opposed to reparations because they think it's just writing out checks, then they need to do a little research. And it's only going to take them 30 seconds on Google to realize that the biggest proponents of reparations are those folks who are essentially saying reinvest in infrastructure, help in domestic policy, help with inner cities, help alleviate poverty, and provide a living wage for people. And this is not really race specific when you think about
it. No, not at all. It's for helping poor people.
And all of the programs that have most benefited black people have most benefited rich white men.
All of the programs that have most benefited black people have most benefited rich white men.
There's nothing.
Medicaid?
There's nothing. Well, that wasn't for black folk.
It wasn't for black folk. No. All right.
What you're saying is
race targeted programs have most. Okay. Well, so should we have race targeted programs? And what should they be?
Well, there's de facto race-targeted stuff, and then there's de jure, right?
All right, so what de jure? What actual race target? I mean, when you talk about affirmative action, the way you've expressed it, I don't think it is very controversial. The question really, when people talk about affirmative action, the thing that white people think about is, will a less qualified black person get the job than a more qualified white person? Let's just say it. Let's just say that's what people are worried
about.
And
there's nothing wrong with being ignorant, but there is something wrong with staying ignorant. So if you allow yourself to believe that's what affirmative action is, then you're not really conversant about what the real issues are. You are choosing to put something up to be against when, in fact, that's not the nature of the program. And for people who say, well, we need to invest our money wisely, affirmative action has tripled the black middle class in a generation, and very little money went into the program to make that happen.
Give me some examples. I mean, how does that work?
Well, I mean, I can just use myself. I'm a second-generation beneficiary of affirmative action. And as it relates to...
Because your father was qualified and wasn't allowed to get a job because of racism.
Exactly. Doors were opened that benefited my father and my mother, who was 13 years younger, who was really a baby boomer, and my father was older than baby boomer when he was alive. So that allowed greater upward mobility in terms of education and employment.
What specifically did that? I mean, was it a federal program or...
Well, affirmative action was an executive order.
Right.
So it is a federally mandated initiative that says you must... you must allow for it promoted equal opportunity, focused specifically on alleviating some of the disadvantages that African Americans experienced. But because race is such a politicized issue, it opened the door for a lot of other people who were not necessarily at the head of the civil rights movement and in African American community. So to this day, the biggest beneficiary by far, numerically, financially, et cetera, are white women. And I'm fairly certain that there's a large correlation between white women and the white men they marry. So if you're a white man and you're interested in marrying a white woman, and before affirmative action, your wife had very little upward mobility just because of her gender, with affirmative action, she has far greater upward mobility, which means you have greater income, which means you can get that nice Volvo and live in the suburbs.
Right. See, I'm just trying to figure out. To me, affirmative action has means so many things to so many different people. And so I guess I'm trying to look at either specific programs, whether you're talking about, you know, whether it's minority hiring for telecommunications companies that the government is using, or whether you're talking about education, or whether you're talking about, you know, firefighters, where you have a community where, you know, all the firefighters were white and they opened the doors to black people. Which affirmative action do you think works the best, and which do you think is needed more of?
Well, I think the most controversial ones.
Well, you're going to hear his answer after the break. So you heard what I said. I asked him which affirmative action works the best, which is the most controversial ones, and we're just going to take a little break here. If you want to call in, by the way, and comment on anything that I or Chris Rabb said, it is a live show, and I welcome your comments. Affirmative action is an issue that a lot of people don't like to talk about or afraid to talk about. I want to encourage you not to be afraid to talk about it, to say the things out loud that people only whisper. That's, after all, part of what this program, the Head On Radio Network, is all about. So call in 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 and 3 Quarters. All you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm just talking with blogger Chris Rabb, an African-American blogger, the Afro-netizen. He has a very wide following there in the blogosphere about affirmative action. I tried to raise the issues that whites and blacks really are afraid to talk about. And I asked him what kind of affirmative action does he think works and what does he think is the most controversial. Here's his answer.
Are ones that have to do more with percentages of, let's say, quote-unquote minority contractors. So like the city of Richmond in the early, mid-90s said we want 30% of all city contracts to go to businesses of color. Exactly.
Right.
And so that went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and they said, you can't do that. And the Supreme Court said, yeah, you can't do that. Well, the problem with making some arbitrary number is that it's arbitrary, even though the intention was very good, saying we want inclusiveness in terms of wealth creation and business development so that it has a positive impact residually into all communities,
okay,
and not just the white business community.
In your view, how can the same goal be achieved in a constitutional way where you reach out to minority contractors and still get, you know, the best money, the best bid you can get?
Well, this is very tricky because I think it's a two-part answer. And the first part is you could do it by zip code, which is de facto race, because we live in such a segregated country. You could say for any zip code that has a certain percentage of folks who are under the poverty line, that you provide opportunities, special opportunities to level the playing field.
Okay, but see, now that is not race-specific. It's
right.
Poverty-specific.
But it
and
correlates
race,
highly with...
Right, it correlates highly with race, but right. That's sort of, I think, the point I was trying to bring up at the beginning, that I think you will find a lot more support if you're seeking support
but the
white
problem
America
is
for
that
affirmative action for helping poor people of whatever race, even if the
right.
great majority of them are black.
But here's,
what
a big
makes
problem.
White people upset mm-hmm. is the idea that Obama's kids might get something special while a middle-class
yeah,
white
you know
person
what?
Doesn't.
Obama might not be able to catch a cab.
That's
you know?
True.
And, you know,
that's
they don't
true.
Care
but affirmative action won't help you on that.
No, but that's still tackling the issue of institutional racism.
That
regardless of my socioeconomic background and my level of formal education, I can't catch a cab. If I'm with a group of people, I will let the white person hail the cab, and that's a very, very sad thing. I mean, I've traveled all over the country, all over the world, and in my own country, I got to ask one of my white friends to hail a cab for me, and it doesn't matter how smart I am, how good I am, how good a father, it doesn't matter. And so when we talk about affirmative action and leveling the playing field, as someone who grew up middle class and has a lot of advantages, even though I don't need the things that a lot of my brethren who are poor and working poor, I still suffer from racism every day. It's in a very different way.
Right. Now, there's no question
right?
about it that racism still exists.
So you have to make sure that it's not just class-specific because race and class intersect. Because if you look at all of the black people coming out of the top business schools, I mean, there is a critical mass of black people over the past 30 years since the advent of affirmative action that have not become CEOs, that have not become presidents of divisions of major companies, large nonprofits, et cetera, and they are qualified, if not overqualified. And some of that is racism. Not all of it, but some of it is.
No question.
And so you're saying, well, it's not just that these people are poor or they are uneducated. They are black. So the first thing I said about zip code-specific stuff is deals with the class element and deals with poverty.
I'm just arguing. Okay,
politically, mm-hmm.
if you argue class, I think you're going to get a lot more support. I'm just, you know, even if
right.
the zip code is 99% black,
right.
if you argue we're helping all poor people in the city of Philadelphia or
right.
wherever you're from, I just think that's a more of a political winner. Number two, with diversity, I think particularly in education, a very strong argument can be made that if kids want to learn, they're not going to learn, you know, if all white kids from Boston, Massachusetts are in a university, that's not a university. There's no universe there.
Right.
Right. I mean, you need men and women. You need black and white and Latino
mm-hmm.
and Asian and foreign. You need people
right.
from Massachusetts and West
right.
Virginia and Alaska and, you know, some foreign countries there. So I think a strong argument can be made for race-specific affirmative action in the university setting.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think a strong argument can be made for affirmative action in cases where there's a long history. You know, if there's a police force in, you know, Simi Valley, out of Simi Valley,
right.
California, that's in Watts,
right.
beating up black people.
Right.
There's a very strong argument to be made there. I guess you can argue however you want. I think affirmative action is best argued when you look at specific examples. And you can give the specific example of the firefighter or the university or
well,
even the CEOs
that's
you're talking
fairly
about.
That's fairly easy to do in most of these contexts.
I'm not saying
yeah,
it isn't.
You know?
I'm just saying that when I think affirmative action is talked about in the abstract,
right.
that's when that famous Jesse Helms ad comes
right.
to a lot of people's
right.
minds. And so it's not so much that I disagree with you. It's that I'm trying to maybe help frame your argument in a way that I think white people will listen to.
Right. Well, and it's important to explicitly frame stuff because you have to. Otherwise, everyone will have – it's like – I try not to use the word racism too much because we...
Some people turn off.
Yeah. Well, and also, I've rarely heard people, even all black people, agree on the definition of racism or love for that matter, or now progressive. Everyone's using progressive. And I see people identify as progressive, and I say, if you're progressive, what does that make me? What am I, an anarchist or something?
May be. I don't know, Chris.
Not that I'm aware of, but, you know, I need to look in the mirror again, perhaps. But on the affirmative action thing is... affirmative action is not just just Google it. Just go to Wikipedia. Affirmative action is a very discreet initiative that was put in place to level the playing field for a certain segment of society, not all of society. And what has happened is politicians have used it as fear mongers and hate mongers to send messages that affirmative action was not meant to convey. And as a result, affirmative action is not really affirmative action. It's something else.
Well, here's my suggestion for you then. Sometimes when, let's call them enemies of progress, we can call them whatever we want, but when people abuse terms, and perhaps the most classic example is liberal, which, you know, liberal, the idea for change, the idea for promoting change and supporting, liberal comes from liberty, freedom. Who can argue with that? Became the L word, became the dirty word in the 80s with Rush Limbaugh and everything else. You know, we tried to rehabilitate liberal for years, and finally we're like, okay, we're going to let liberal die. We are now progressives.
Right.
And it ain't that different, but hey, it sounds different to people. And if we have to give up a word in order to get our policies across,
right. Fine.
Let me suggest to you that affirmative action may need a new name. What do you think?
Sure, I could live with that. I mean,
okay. We'll have to think of a good one. I don't have one off the top of my head.
I like leveling the playing field.
Leveling the playing
field. Because, you know,
that's a good one.
Who's opposed to leveling the playing field?
Nobody.
Very few people
are.
Equal
opportunity for all.
But you first have to acknowledge that the playing field is not
level
at all. And that's difficult for a lot of people because they say, well, what about Obama? What about Colin Powell? They did it. They, you know, they just worked hard. And if you just stop whining and get a job, you know, you could be Colin Powell too. And that's a form of exceptionalism that is a nuanced form of racism that we have to talk about. It's not the KKK violent type of racism, but it's one that says it exceptionalizes very anomalous black people.
Well, let me say to you, it's not just black people. It's also classism. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
You know, I mean, a homeless person, you know, Bill Clinton grew up poor. Yeah,
exactly.
He did grow up poor.
Right.
William Jefferson Clinton is an amazing, exceptional story.
Right.
Virtually
He's
no
the
one...
exception and not the rule.
Exactly. So people use that argument all the time.
Absolutely.
I think, though, that there's all kinds of isms in America. And there's no question, in my view, racism still exists in all kinds of forms. I mean, just, you know, driving while black is a crime in most American
mm-hmm.
cities. There's also racism against Latinos and against Asians, and there's sexism against women. There's anti-Semitism still around. There's homophobia. There's classism. There's looksism.
I can't help being beautiful, Mark.
I'm hurt because because you can go and you can get whatever you want, and me, I just get rejected. So I think that's completely unfair, and we need affirmative action for the ugly and for the fat too. Let me tell you, it's pretty hard. And short people, I mean, the vertically disadvantaged.
They've done studies that have shown
exactly.
That, yeah.
So part of the problem is there are all kinds. Honestly, the biggest ism in America, in my view,
mm-hmm.
nepotism.
Nepotism?
People get jobs based on who they know. If you look even at the...
That's as old as prostitution,
of course
though.
It is. But if you look at... To me, most systemic racism, and there's all kinds, but most of it ain't so much we hate black people as we want one of our own.
Right.
My cousin's uncle's friend knows somebody. The Latino community does it. Every immigrant community, they hire their own.
That's human nature.
Yeah, that's the same, too.
That's human nature. But the difference is...
These are the people I know. They're
right.
around. And because white people have had the power for so long...
Right.
They're inviting their friends in. They've got the power. The CEOs of Texas are inviting their friends to be fellow CEOs. They don't know anything about the company, but hey, $100 million? That's kind of hard to turn down. People can offer, you know, the skills of that skill set to their friends and family, and it just turns out that the skills that pay hundreds of millions of dollars are owned by rich, white, fat men from Texas.
Right, but see, that was the original affirmative action. which was the evil version of affirmative action, where people like George W. Bush had greater entree.
No question.
Just because of, you know, his biology, right?
Absolutely.
His genealogy.
He ain't that smart.
Right.
Okay? He ain't that accomplished, and he was doing drugs till he was 40. So, you know, if a black person did that, they'd be in jail.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So there's no question about it. But it's this institutionalized racism, sure, but also sexism, lookism, and frankly, nepotism.
Right. Now, that's important stuff.
I don't see an easy way out of.
Well, see, here's the thing. Can we acknowledge that all of these isms exist, but we still have agency? We still have the ability to do something to counter them. And I think a lot of...
What is your best solution?
Well, what I always do is I'm asked to speak a lot about new media, blogging, politics, racial justice and inclusion in the progressive, new progressive movement and that stuff. And I always start by acknowledging my own sets of largely unearned privileges. I didn't choose to be in a middle-class family. I was born into it. That doesn't make me a better person.
You weren't born in the ghetto.
Yeah, I mean, I lucked out.
Your parents weren't in jail.
Right, exactly. And so that benefited me. It benefited me that I'm straight, that I speak English as a first language, that I don't have an
accent.
And
that you're a damn good-looking guy. So there you go.
But I did a little, you know, I had a little Botox. And, you know,
I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, the whole world.
I didn't know you were completely artificial. I thought it was natural.
No, it's a facade. I'm a hollow shell of a man.
Okay.
But I acknowledge that these things, that I've benefited from these things, and I don't apologize for them, but I state them openly and say that one of the reasons I'm able to be on this show and be paid to come here and to do all these things is because I've leveraged social capital that I've built up by being middle class, by being educated, by working on the Hill. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't make me a better person or a smarter person, but it gives me access. And the thing is with the access is I have a choice. I can choose to bring other people to the table who wouldn't have that opportunity, or I can say, well, you know, I am the best and brightest, and I deserve everything I got.
Don't pull up the ladder after you. I think that's a really, I mean, you made it, everyone who's listening who's made it anywhere has made it because of mentors, people who've come before, people who've helped you, given you a chance, and I think we should encourage everyone to do the same to people coming up, to you know, let the ladder down and let people come up. I would love to see an America that is based, you know, as Martin Luther King said, the content of your character rather than the color of your skin or anything else. A true meritocracy, equal opportunity for all, where everyone who's got a great idea can achieve. Hey, isn't that what capitalism is supposed to be? In theory, isn't that what it's supposed to be? But to have that, you have to have everyone give an equal chance. And to do that, you have to wipe away all the isms, everything from racism to nepotism.
Right, all the way down. And so that's very difficult. So how do you start? You start one step at a time. So if you're in a meeting and it's all men, then a man is responsible for saying, where are the women?
Right.
You know, if it's all, you know, elite, you know, upper middle class, wealthy folks, and you got to say, you know, where's the other class representation? We all have a role, and it's just not just laid at the feet of rich white men. We all have a responsibility every day. And I think that's why I identify as a progressive, because I think largely, not exclusively, but largely conservatives say, oh, you're worrying, you're whining about isms and stuff, just cut your hair and get a job, and, you know, everything work out.
Right.
And I just don't see the world that simply.
It's not. There's all kinds of institutional problems that we have to work on. Chris Rabb, thanks for coming here.
Thank
on the
you, Mark.
Scoop.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. That was truly one of my favorite interviews. And really, in the midst of our, you know, banter, there's a lot of meat there that I hope you caught. I'll just sort of repeat. I mean, first of all, I think we have to recognize there are a lot of isms out there. It's just racism, although I do think racism still wins as the deadliest ism, if you will, the most dangerous still in America. But there are a lot of isms out there because basically people tend to favor, you know, those that look good or those that they know or those of their similar race or religion or whatever. And so in talking about how to defeat it, I think Chris is absolutely right. We have to recognize where we come from, recognize that none of us made it on our own, that we've all had the help of people, mentors, those who have come before us. And just think about that. Don't pull the ladder up after you. When you get there, you got there because of the people that paved the way before you, whether they were the suffragettes or the civil rights movement or those that have worked for religious equality or for equality for gay people, or simply those that worked that, to say that those that didn't have much money would also have a chance in America. So remember those that came before when you yourself are helping other people get a leg up. And after all, that's really how it should all be. That's the way capitalism is supposed to work. You're supposed to give everyone equal opportunity and then let the cream rise to the top. So anyway, I thought it was a terrific interview. If you want to call in and discuss it with me, I would encourage you to do so. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. When we come back, I've got some stars, if you will, ordinary people from the documentary Sicko. Right back after this.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Clyde, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive. Bring it on!
Your calendar for Saturday evening, July 21st, because at 9 p.m. until midnight Eastern, Billy Shears will be right here on the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. You're going to just love night sounds. We'll have plenty of great music and more. So, is it a date? We'll be waiting for you, Saturday night, July 21st. Be there. Carry on now.
From Washington, back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I am replaying some interviews I did a couple weeks ago. I'm not really replaying them. Actually, I'm playing them for the first time right here on the Horn. I've heard them, but no one else has. I hope you're enjoying them. I just finished what I thought was a really terrific discussion with Chris Rabb, Afro Netizen on Affirmative Action. I want to move a bit to another topic. It also deals, though, with helping those that will need help in America. I mean, and after all, that is, it seems to me, what a progressive ideology is all about, that we are our brother's keepers. We do have to look out for each other. We do have to help each other. And frankly, health insurance is a great way to do that. We pool our resources and make sure that everyone gets covered. Michael Moore's movie Sicko is out now. I hope you've seen it, and I have seen it too. I thought it was fantastic, and love to talk with you about it. Just give us a call at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Just before the movie came out, just a few days before it came out, I had the distinct pleasure to interview Larry and Donna Smith. You may remember them. They were the ones who had to move into their daughter's home because of health care costs. You'll hear their stories. I don't need to repeat it for them. And after the interview, I want to encourage you folks to call in and talk about universal health care. Here is the interview.
I'm sitting here with Donna Smith. Now, if you haven't seen the movie Sicko yet, and as of the time I'm interviewing Donna, the movie hasn't come out, so none of us can be blamed for not having seen it yet. But by the time you hear this, I think the movie will be out, and I urge everyone to go see it. Donna Smith and her husband, Larry Smith, are featured in the film. In what context, Donna?
Basically, our story is a lot like many Americans' story in that we've always had health insurance from the time we were first married. We made it a priority to have it. We had the misfortune to get ill, both of us. My husband's had some serious artery disease and heart disease. I ended up getting cancer. And even though we were fully insured, between the deductibles, the high premiums, the co-pays, the medication costs, we ended up being bankrupt, losing our home, and moving in with our daughter.
Oh, my God. Where do you live?
We now live in Aurora, Colorado.
And before?
We were in South Dakota. We were in western South Dakota with our own home, and I was the editor of a small daily newspaper.
And you had health insurance?
We had health insurance.
Who was the company?
Dakota Care was the name of the company, a very large company in South Dakota. In rural states, it's often hard to find very many companies that will insure small groups. And
you still went bankrupt?
Still. The deductibles were between the two of us were $6,000 a year, and you had to meet that deductible before your insurance kicked in. So by the time you have a couple of serious illnesses, you've eaten up several $1,000s that you owe. And for us, the final straw came when a medical collector actually took it to the point of wanting to garnish my wages.
To pay for the deductible?
To pay for the deductible portion of a bill for which they had already received thousands from our insurance company. And if I had been garnished, not only the humiliation of that and the trauma of it, we would not have had enough money left to pay the health insurance premium out of my take-home pay. So there was no option. We ended up going bankrupt, and that in itself is an extremely shameful thing. So add to cancer, add to heart disease, add to the things that are happening to us, the fact that now we've gone belly up in a system that judges your value by what you've achieved financially.
Do you have health insurance now?
Yes, we do have health insurance. My husband's on Medicare, and he also pays for a Humana supplemental policy. We pay for that, and I also have insurance through Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Are they any better than DakotaCare?
They're better. They're better in terms of premiums and co-pays and deductibles. But once you get to the point, it takes you years. It took us years to build what we had. We have six children. We raised six kids. And we have 13 grandchildren. And the humiliation of asking them to take us in their home to live because we couldn't make it anymore on our own was horrendous for everybody.
I have to ask, you said you had cancer. Is it in remission? How's your health?
Thank you for asking. I'm cancer-free at this time. And one of the ways I found that out is Michael Moore was kind enough to take me to Cuba for assessment and evaluation in Cuba. So in early March, I traveled there along with seven other Americans with Michael for the film.
And, I mean, are you confident that they gave you the right analysis?
Absolutely. I went to Cuba on nine separate prescription medications. I came home from Cuba on four. And it was an amazing process for me to go see a different form of medicine. Cuba has a lot of problems. There's a lot of issues in Cuba. I don't want to live in Cuba. And they're lovely people, and it's a lovely country. But one of the things that's not broken is health care. Everybody who needs health care gets it, and they don't have to pay for it, and you don't have to feel guilty. And that was a revelation for me. I've never felt that. We've spent 20 years fighting for health care for ourselves. At the same time, when you're catastrophically ill, it's wrong. And I think the main reason that we're in the film is not because we're unique. It's because we're not unique. It's unsadly.
Do you think the solution is universal health care?
Absolutely. Without a doubt, single-payer universal health care. I can't see any other way that we're going to remove the profit margins from health. And so long as there's profit associated with it, people are going to get stuck in the middle of it, and they're going to get hurt.
Well, Donna Smith, Larry Smith, I wish you a long life and good health.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming here on the Inside
Thank
Scoop.
You. Keep the pressure on health care. A lot of people in this position are hurting too badly to even get out there and speak. And on a movie screen in Manhattan on Monday night, I regained my dignity. And I'm counting on the rest of you to give back the dignity to millions of people like me who don't have it right now. Thank you.
Very, very powerful. Thank you very much. Thank Larry, you want to say something?
I just wanted to say one of the horrible things about this is not even shown in Michael Moore's movie, although he showed as much as he could. But I had gone to Mayo Clinic in 2004, assuming that I would have a job when I got back, and because they decided all of a sudden that they didn't want to keep me there as a disabled person working there, they went ahead and fired me.
Because you needed health care.
Well, I had already gotten it, and they didn't want anybody that was disabled.
How are you disabled?
I can't lift over 20 pounds and I can't walk more than 200 feet because I have claudication.
And what's your job?
I was a cashier at a casino in Deadwood. Yeah, I was.
Did you need to carry more than 20 pounds to be a cashier?
Yeah, they had coin bags.
I see.
But I had worked it out for a solid year, and I'd filled out all the paperwork to make sure I had the job back when I came back from my operation, and they went ahead and fired me.
Unfortunately,
so
as your wife said, it's
personal.
It's not, your story is not unique. I mean, your individual situation is, but this is happening all across the country. Thanks for coming on the air and sharing your story.
You.
I want to hear from Melinda Moskowitz. Now, she is a registered nurse. She is with the California Nurses Association, fighting for health care for Americans, and actually an organization that did an amazing thing. They took down a popular governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger of California, and made the strong man say uncle, I guess it's fair to say.
Yes, we did. And I can tell you, that's what nurses are about, registered nurses, nurses from the California Nurses Association National Organizing Committee. Our patients come first, and anyone or anything that gets in our way of protecting our patients, we will not tolerate that.
What was the issue in California?
Well, the issue was that we had passed a long-needed patient-nurse ratio in California because of the lack of care that patients were getting in the hospital and the safety net. And when he became governor, he had taken, during his campaign, he took a lot of money from the hospital industry, the insurance companies, the HMO, and the pharmaceuticals. And so when he became governor, one of his first acts was to freeze the improvement in the nurse-to-patient ratios on a med-surg unit where the majority of the patients are. And so that was an attack on our patients. But also he was at a convention that had women to celebrate women. And we were there with our banners to say, hands off our ratios. And he said to the audience of thousands of people that don't pay attention to those people over there. They don't like me because I'm always kicking their butts.
And you basically took your case to the people of California, and I think in a proposition, am I right, you got him beaten, something like that.
Well, yeah, he had a lot of propositions that were going to really take the safety net away from firefighters and their families and teachers and then our patients of California. And we did a coalition of those groups and just the community, and they were outraged, and we took them down.
Now Melinda, why are you here? Are you helping to promote the movie Sicko?
Absolutely. We're working with Michael Moore.
What have you done with regard to the film?
Well, we're out there. I mean, because...
Supporting the film. The California Nurse Association has endorsed the film.
Has endorsed the film, and we're actually working with Michael Moore, and we have for many, many months. But as registered nurses, we see on a daily basis the effects of our broken healthcare system. And
when you say you see the effects, lack of care, lack of money for care,
lack
people
denial,
being forced out of hospital beds, what are we talking about?
Denial of patient care from the insurance companies. Imagine you have a wife or a mother that comes into the hospital and she has cancer and she has surgery to remove the cancer and she has drains coming from those wounds with blood, and in less than 24 hours the insurance company industry is saying that patient has to go home. They haven't even had the opportunity to grieve their loss and deal with the cancer or have the education to really care for themselves while they're there. But the insurance industry says that they're well to go home. That is outrageous. You have people that are denied care, that have insurance. You have people that, you know, are tied to a job that they don't want to stay at. And
in order to keep their health insurance.
Yes. They don't. And you know, this is, you know, Donna and Larry's story we see on a daily basis. And we are absolutely unrelentless, and we are not going to stop until the insurance companies are out of the health care, because they're denying care. And until we remove them from our health care system, more people are going to die, more people are going to be denied. And the only solution is a single payer.
Universal health care.
Universal health care.
Now, some say, well, if that happens, people won't get to choose their own doctors.
Oh, that is totally inaccurate. I mean, you know, and I think what we're hearing is people, the hospital industries, insurance companies, pharmaceuticals, and a lot of people in power want to scare the community, so they say you won't be able to choose your doctor. That is totally inaccurate.
The famous Harry and Louise commercials that took down Hillary Care in the 1990s.
The truth is that every citizen will be able to choose the physician they want. They can choose the hospital they want. You won't have the insurance industry dictating to the physicians what kind of care the patients are going to get, what procedures they're going to get. This is something that we need. And it's kind of like, you know, in your home, you know, you have termites. You have to get rid of every one of them. This incremental plan that you hear a lot is not going to work, because if you don't get rid of the total termites, they're going to come back, and they're just going to grow and grow and grow. And that's what the insurance industry is.
Now, how do you answer the people that say, well, but, you know, in America, for the rich, if you can pay for care, we should be able to pay for, you know, the best care possible?
If you're rich, yeah, they do. But, you know, we have to get away from being a society about it's about me. We're the only country that...
We're the only industrialized country that doesn't have universal health care.
Absolutely.
Canada, France,
absolutely.
Britain, I mean, any other
absolutely.
Country I can think of.
And Michael Moore's movie Sicko really illustrates what's happening on a daily basis in our country. And we have to start thinking about everyone else. You know, you hear about this, you know, it's socialized medicine. You know, we have a lot of socialized programs. We
Social Security, Medicare.
Social Security, firefighters.
Public education.
The police department, our libraries. And can you imagine if your house is on fire and a fire truck comes up and the fire are coming to try to put out your fire, and they're going to ask you, do you have insurance?
You know what, Melinda? It used to be that way. I have to tell you this. I live in Alexandria, Virginia. And right close to the old town, the old colonial neighborhood. And if you look there in Alexandria or Philadelphia or Boston or any very old city, Charleston, mm-hmm. you see on the homes there are plaques for various fire companies. And there are different fire companies you belong to. And the way it worked in colonial periods is if your house was on fire, the fire truck would come out. If you had your insurance plaque, then what they would do is they'd save your house. And if you didn't, they wouldn't. But what they would do is if the house next to you, these are all townhouses, was burning down, if you paid your insurance, they would carefully put the flames just on the border to protect the home that paid the insurance.
Exactly.
And I'm afraid that's sort of where our health care is right now.
Absolutely. And is that what we want? Is that what we want for our mothers or our wives or our children?
For anybody.
You know?
Thank you very much for coming on The Inside Scoop.
I hope you enjoyed those interviews. That, by the way, is true. People don't even know what they are. It's funny. I was explaining to someone who was coming through Alexandria the other day. But in any old city in America, or I presume England as well, you go through and you see those plaques, and you better have that plaque on the wall, because if you went with a insurance company that went out of business, then your house would burn down and they would come and protect your neighbor's house. There's one last chance to call in, Malone, if you want to call back. I'd love to hear from you. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Talking about affirmative action, or health care, or anything else in the news. You know, today we had Harriet Myers refused to talk. Sarah Taylor refused to talk. It's amazing, really. It seems the President of the United States thinks that Congress has no role whatsoever to play. And yet Article 1 in the Constitution is about the Congress. If you read our Constitution, you realize that Congress is the most important branch, President is second, and the courts third of our three branches. And it seems like this stonewalling by the president, it's really an insult I think, to all of us who believe in the checks and balances of the Constitution. I'll give you one last chance to call in, 888-488-6275, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. You know, as I talk with people, when I talk with fellow progressives, when I watch the Michael Moore movie Sicko, when I watch this president refuse to allow anyone to talk to his aides, it just strikes me that there's a huge basic human difference between the way a progressive approaches his or her country, his or her problems, and the way that a conservative ideologue does. There is, of course, no such thing as compassionate conservatism. All the compassion, it seems, is gone out of the word. That word is an oxymoron, compassionate conservative. But progressives, I think, realize, particularly as you look at movies like Michael Moore's movie, and the people of England and the people of France and the people of Canada and those good people in the United States, is we're all on this planet together. And we all can help each other. We all have an obligation, I think, to do something to help each other. And it seems the conservatives, it reminds me of the two-year-old that goes running around the house, mine, 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 mine. And I'm not saying that there can't be inefficiencies or that you know, the government always does the right thing. And listen, the government often does the wrong thing when you've got incompetent leaders in control. That's why you need people watching the government, seeing what they're doing. That's why you need oversight. That's why the president should obey Congress when they want to find out what's going on. But in essence, it's just at the heart of the matter. It's the people who were born on third base think they hit a triple. That's a conservative. And a progressive, no matter where you're born. In fact, sometimes I think it's wild that the people pick on John Edwards because he's made a lot of money. I mean, he grew up in a poor family. He's made a lot of money. Good for John Edwards. That's okay. It's okay to be rich in America. It's okay that John Edwards has expensive haircuts. It's okay that Franklin Delano Roosevelt was rich, as was John F. Kennedy, because they used their money, they used their talent. Someone like John Kerry, a very wealthy man, hasn't forgotten the poor. There's nothing wrong with being rich. Sometimes people, conservatives, make liberals feel like we hate the rich. But what a progressive understands is it just because you have lots of money does not make you a better human being, does not make you better than anyone else. And when it comes down to the right to live, the right to live, the right to get cancer treatment, the right to get your finger back if it's cut off in a buzzsaw, do we really think that only the rich should get health care? Is that really the kind of America we believe in? Do we really not see that much poorer countries than us do care for all their citizens? I don't like to think of Americans that way. I think of Americans as places with bake-offs and you know, where they raise money for each other, and you know, the old Christmas special where Jimmy Stewart, It's a Wonderful Life, he's in trouble and his neighbors tune in and help him out. That's the America I like to think of. It's obviously the America that Republicans hate the most. The ones they hate the most. Oh, I just found out Radin was on the line and I didn't know. Yikes. Radin, okay, go ahead. Take 30 seconds. Go.
Okay, Mark, thanks.
I'm sorry, I didn't see you were on the line. Give me your best 30 seconds.
Run. Okay, here we go. We've got a few days till the 15th when the internet royalty rates take over and music on the web may be going down. So that's my call to action for the day along with everything else. And I don't think Mel Watt was being at all unparliamentarian this morning, and I liked his words in the committee.
I've always liked him. I think he's great.
I even.
Radin, thanks for calling in. Next time, call in a little bit earlier, all right?
I will.
But she's absolutely right on that. We have to protect internet neutrality. Listen to Radin. That's all for me. I'll see you next week. This is Mark Levine signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. A House committee will pursue contempt charges against former White House counsel Harriet Myers after following the president's directive and not showing up for a hearing on the firings of federal prosecutors. The president invoked executive privilege, thus freeing Myers of making any testimony. The president said today during a press conference the interim progress report on the Iraq war is cause for optimism. The document shows Baghdad has met 8 out of 18 benchmarks, but has failed on another 8, with 2 goals having mixed results. President Bush said the U.S. mission can succeed in Iraq, adding troops will be withdrawn when conditions warrant it. The president also commented on the commutation of Lewis Scooter Libby's prison sentence, saying it was a, quote, fair and balanced decision. President Bush said today he is sending Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Defense Secretary Robert Gates to the Middle East next month. The two will attempt to strengthen international support for democracy in Iraq. The latest intelligence report says al-Qaeda has restored its operating capabilities to its strongest since 9/11. According to a U.S. counterterrorism analyst, the terrorist group has utilized its safe haven along the Afghan-Pakistan border and has repositioned itself to better attack the West. The International Atomic Energy Agency, the UN's nuclear watchdog group, has reached an agreement with Iran regarding how to proceed with negotiations over the state's nuclear activities. The agreement comes soon after Tehran's cooperation in scaling back its uranium enrichment program. That program, if not fully suspended, may lead to further UN sanctions. Former Newark Mayor Sharp James was indicted on corruption charges today for allegations involving land sales and improper use of city-issued credit cards. The 71-year-old faces 33 counts of fraud for approving the sale of city-owned land to a female companion at below-market prices. The indictment also cites the use of city credit cards for funding vacations with 8 women in the U.S. and South America. It is reported that James has turned himself in to the FBI. South Dakota's first execution in 60 years was held last night. A 25-year-old Texas man was put to death by lethal injection for the torture and murder of a 19-year-old during a home robbery. Funeral services are pending for First Lady Lady Bird Johnson following her death yesterday in Austin, Texas. She was 94. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business, next.
If you're a news junkie, there's a book you must read called Don't Mess with the Press, How to Write, Report, and Produce Quality Television News. Don't Mess with the Press is a textbook for journalism students and a handbook for people already in the business. While written primarily as an instructional guide, Don't Mess with the Press is also useful for people who follow the news closely, who want to understand how news decisions are made by quality reporters to ensure they get the best news coverage possible. Don't Mess with the Press was written by Tony Seaton, founder and executive producer of the Quality News Network. Tony began his broadcast journalism career in his teens, eventually covering Watergate, 6 elections, 5 space shots, and a wide range of general news. He also produced Barbara Walters' news interviews for ABC. Ordering information for Don't Mess with the Press can be found at qualitynewsnetwork.com. Visit our website and click on the Don't Mess with the Press link.
An investigation will begin in the disappearance of $22 million in computers and other equipment from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In the last 3 years, there have been 61 investigations into the disappearance of CDC property, none of which resulted in disciplinary action. Florida's governor is poised to sign an executive order requiring stricter greenhouse gas emissions from automobiles. His legislation would also raise energy standards on new construction and force utilities to generate 20% of their power from renewable sources. A dozen scientists in a 41-foot raft made of reeds and wooden planks have set sail on a trip from New York to Spain. The journey, which is expected to take 2 weeks, is attempting to prove that Stone Age sailors could have made a similar voyage. 92% of Americans favor labels on food revealing the product's country of origin. That's according to a poll by Consumer Reports magazine.